So JJ, Wael is Al Jazeera Arabic bureau chief in Gaza, and he's been covering Gaza for many years for Al Jazeera. So, including all the wars that happened in the last 20 years in Gaza. During this war and after Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu asked the civilian population of North Gaza to move south. Wael was covering from Gaza City, which is a very dangerous place, and he is probably the last correspondent from an international media outlet that's still, or a wire service that is still covering on air from Gaza City. He had to choose whether to keep his family with him in the city, where it's not safe, or ask them to make sure they move south, where he thought they're going to be in a safe place. So they moved to a relative's house in Al-Nusayrat, refugee camp, which is south of Gaza Valley or Wadi Gaza. This is the line that separates North Gaza from South Gaza, where they were supposed to move based on what the Israeli government and military told them to do. However, they were where they were sheltering. That house was targeted. 14 members of his extended family were killed, including his wife, his daughter, his son, and his grandson. People in Gaza now say there's no safe place in Gaza because although they followed directions from the Israeli military, they moved south. Many Palestinians are still being killed in South Gaza. And just to put it, it's not only the civilians. The situation is so grave that the UN just yesterday, mourned the death of 59 of its staffers in Gaza. That's a staggering number on top of all the civilians. Where are we now? People, I'm not able to keep track of how many civilians have been killed so far. Are we at 8,300 now? More than what, 3,400 children? And it keeps on growing, and it's unbelievable. In terms of journalists, CPJ, they believe based on what they were able to verify. In the first 3 weeks, 24 Palestinian journalists were killed. Al Jazeera thinks that this type of indiscriminate targeting of Gaza civilian infrastructure will eventually lead to death, not only journalists, their families. Many journalists lost their families. So it's real. The situation is really dire. When we talk from here, it sounds like statistics. But people who are on the ground, journalists you talk to, UN staffers, they describe the situation as a living hell.
Sadie, you're exactly right about all of that, and we just don't seem to be able to predict where this is going to go. You are very familiar with this conflict between Israel and Hamas. Give us your view on where this stands now. I mean, maybe a bit of background on where it came from, but where it stands now, because have you ever seen it worse?
But JJ, when we describe this as a conflict between Israel and Hamas, if we look at the civilian death toll, when you're talking about 8,300 killed so far, when CPJ says this last 3 weeks have been the deadliest for journalists covering the conflict since 1992, when CPJ, which is the Committee to Protect Journalists, have been, tracking the numbers. This is a war that's going beyond Hamas. What's been targeted, 50% or more of residents in Gaza destroyed or damaged. This is like civilian units. When hospitals are being targeted, UN schools where people go to take refuge, every corner in Gaza is being bombed. This is going way beyond just, war between Israel and Hamas. So it is important to clarify this thing. The roots of this conflict is In many ways, it's the history of occupation and displacement and ethnic cleansing and administrative and military oppression. I mean, if you don't want to look at Gaza, look at what's happening in the West Bank, right? This is an area that is supposed to be ruled by the Palestinian Authority, where people are facing daily settlers, Israeli settlers' violence. People are rounded up and put in prison by, and it drives off like tens and hundreds up until September 19, right before this latest round of war. Almost 230 Palestinians were killed, both in the West Bank and Gaza. So this situation has been going on for decades. However, we pay attention when the toll becomes so big. But in the last rounds since Hamas took control of the Gaza Strip, we haven't seen something at this scale, obviously. October 7 was exceptional for many people on both sides. But since then, the way Israel went about its war, that is not only alarming, Palestinians because they are on the receiving end, but even the American administration. Now you see more and more in the statements, whether from the phone calls between President Biden and Prime Minister Netanyahu, whether from the DOD, the State Department, there's more emphasis on the human side of this issue and the way the Israeli forces should be conducting this war. So there is a lot of concern, but at the end of the day, for many, what started this whole situation is basically shutting down all avenues of peace, getting to a situation where two people can live side by side with security and equal opportunities. However, if you talk to Palestinians now, if you talk to people who have been following the situation, there is no room anymore for an independent Palestinian state because the land for that state does not exist anymore because of the expanding settlement activity that's been happening under every American administration. And this is the situation. So you're not able to carry on with that project that started with Oslo for an independent Palestinian state. You're not able to live a normal life. And more than 2 million people, 2.3 million people, live in what is being described as an open concentration camp, the biggest in the world. They're under siege from the air, from the sea, from the land, and they have no way to go. So if you put pressure on people for so long, something is going to happen. And every American administration, especially this one, thought they can, just deal with the situation in terms of management. However, the occupation, by its nature, it generates crisis. This is what oppression and occupation does. And in the US, here we hear young people, when they protest events, when civilians are harmed, no justice, no peace. I mean, this is not only a slogan, this is the human history.
Yeah. And say that you make a very good point. This is no longer a situation that we can call an Israel-Hamas situation. This is way beyond that, and you've explained that very eloquently. One of the things I want to ask you about as we continue to dig into this a little bit was about you as a journalist and you and your colleagues continuing to do your work objectively. I know this has got to be hard because of what took place, but you're a professional and you're one of the best that's out there. And I know that from years of watching and experience. But give us a sense of how difficult it is right now to do that because of what you're seeing and what you know and what's taking place.
JJ, I guess you're alluding to the fact that many of my colleagues with Al Jazeera Arabic in the US have roots in the region. We have relatives, people, friends who have been affected. I've been affected, on a personal level. Just at the beginning of this new round of war, I lost my dear friend, Issam Abdullah. He was a photographer for Reuters. He was targeted while he was doing his job in South Lebanon, just recently. He was killed in attack, but what Lebanese security are saying was Apache helicopter strike, two consecutive strikes within 30 seconds, although he was with a group of journalists in an open area, away from the line of fire, with Al Jazeera crew as well, with AFP, with other local media. They were all marked in press, whether the bulletproof vest, helmets, Al Jazeera car, the SUV was marked with press, and yet they were targeted by two missiles.
Let me interrupt very quickly. One quick question. Do you believe we're in a time now when people knowingly, deliberately ignore journalists that are covering war?
I think so, because when CPJ, the Committee to Protect for Protection of Journalists, say that the last 3 weeks were the deadliest for journalists since 1992, that's not a coincidence. When Israeli authorities get in touch with media outlets and say we cannot guarantee the safety of your crews, that's a clear messaging that, you know, you cannot operate in that zone because of the type of strikes Israel is launching. Al Jazeera described it as indiscriminate. So as I said, it is personal because I lost people. My friend, Carmen Johadar, Al Jazeera correspondent in South Lebanon, was injured in that attack. My dear friend, photographer for Al Jazeera, Eli Brachia, has been injured. He needs at least a year to recover and many surgeries. And we don't know if he's going to be able to go back and work as a photographer again. The career that he built over the years, he covered so many wars. So it is personal. But at the same time, JJ, I believe any journalist who's been trying to cover this story, it's been so difficult. How do you wrap your mind around such numbers in such a short period of time? More than 8,000 civilians killed. And you look at the situation, the humanitarian situation, the daily suffering, the shutting down of electricity, cutting off the strip from the outside world, no fuel, no food, a couple of days ago, no communication. This is beyond anything we have seen so far in recent conflicts. This is so brutal that it you don't have to be from the region to kind of struggle with the situation. But as you said, because of that emotional contact, because you know people on the ground, it is difficult. But at the end of the day, every journalist has to make a choice. Being professional is being able to ask the right question, get the right piece of information, and being able to cover a conflict based on facts, because that's what gets the people to understand the real situation on the ground, you know? Although we have so much disinformation, so it is up to us, the professionals, to be able to still do our job, maintain credibility, because if we think we have a duty toward the people who are suffering, we have to maintain our credibility at the end of the day to tell the truth, you know?